This is the Oil Sand Tech Podcast
with Aaron Shearhart.
The oil sand industry is the largest unconventional oil business in Canada. And on this podcast, we'll be interviewing people who are building products and building services that can improve the oil sands. We tell the story of how to build products and bring them to market. The Oil Sand Tech Podcast. And now, Aaron Shearhart.
Similarly,
So generally speaking, when a client comes to you, so let's say somebody has an idea or a prototype that they'd like to commercialize, so generally speaking, they keep the intellectual property, but if it fits within a specific domain, then you have an agreement, and then it's a matter of sharing that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So another thing we can do is we can either have the clients we have using our facilities with our support, or they can just rent out the equipment on their own. So this helps in two ways. One is with intellectual property. So if there's some sort of a trade secret that client has, they don't want any other people around, they can just go use that piece of equipment on their own within our lab and have that secrecy and that separation. Another area, though, is just cost reduction. So we have advanced degrees around the office. We have engineers and highly skilled technicians. They often cost a lot. If you're making your first few devices, those are the people you want to have around. But suppose you're starting to creep into the higher volumes, you know, hundreds of units. They're pretty expensive to use as your labor. So we do offer to our clients, if they have operators they would like to bring in to do one specific task, and you don't have to pay them as much because they're not as diverse and highly qualified, then you'd be able to use our equipment that way too. So we try and make it as friendly as possible for small and medium-sized businesses to help us, to get help. Now, I talked a bit about the different areas where we help out. I'll touch on two of them, and first is on the business side, and second is on the technical side, different ways, different models of helping our clients. I'll touch on the business one first, and what I'm showing is different areas where ACAM can help out either directly with our skills, or if we have partners in the area we know and we can direct our clients to their help. You can engage ACAMP in certain areas, but not in other areas. It's really an a la carte approach. So you get to pick and choose. So that can start with the opportunity and idea, going through a marketing strategy, developing a business case. Next is IP protection, is a very important area, manufacturing strategy, and then doing customer presentations. So in any of those areas, you can get ACAMP to help, and really we do a quote where we would say we'll help you for X number of hours to achieve a certain result, and when we're done, there's no continuing relationship. It's as long as the client wants to have that.
So basically, if you're building some sort of product and you run into a roadblock, let's say you're you have an idea for the IP, but you don't know exactly what the process is in order to actually go and file a patent, or if it's best to seek out, trademarks associated with that product. So is that's a kind of an area that you would take a tailored approach to that specific problem?
Yeah, and in fact, with IP, what we would do is we know some people in the area where we can direct the client, so that really should be a legal professional, and we happen to know some people who can help that out. Often, though, on the business side, this will tie into funding. So you need to write a business case and have a business strategy in order to unlock either grant funding from the government or if you're trying to get other investors on board. And so if you're an inventor, you may not be so experienced in this area. We'll be able to help out creating some specific documents, perhaps part of the submission for a grant, so that that can be successful with a fully rounded application for that. Next, on the technical side, the product development group can help in a lot of very specific engineering areas. So even starting from taking a concept and fleshing it out. So you may have something that's working on the lab bench, but you want to characterize it a bit better and write some specifications around that. We can certainly start with that. Next, we highly encourage a really methodical, thought-out approach to the engineering of that part. So that can include designing it, simulating it with some advanced software, doing some verification, and then last of all, the design for manufacturing. Just because you have one working on a lab bench doesn't mean you're ready to make hundreds of them in a disciplined factory. That then leads into the different success areas, including the fabrication of your product, assembling it and packaging it, and then, of course, testing it before you ship it to make sure you're achieving your quality targets. And that can be done through things like inline testing and characterizing the product. And then finally,
interesting that I found that when we were having a chat prior to kind of recording this podcast. So you mentioned that you have some facilities here in order to do preliminary manufacturing in terms of, let's say, first production run before you're going off to a mass manufacturing kind of situation in China or another big factory. So maybe could you talk briefly just about the kind of facilities that you have in order to achieve that and what kind of volumes that you're looking at for at what point they would move from a facility like the camp here to a manufacturer?
Sure. So when you're doing low to medium volume manufacturing, suppose you're doing hundreds to thousands of devices per month, we can handle that. But when you start getting into higher volumes, when you really want to look at a contract manufacturer or bring it in-house once your business is successful enough, then at that point, we would help do the transition. So what we would do is we document all of our manufacturing processes. We'll describe the equipment that we're using, the settings that are on that equipment, and then we can transfer that knowledge to the eventual manufacturer. So that's a very methodical approach to making sure that you have the transfer occur without any hiccups in quality. So you don't want any kind of tacit knowledge that the operator might have to get lost. You want everything to be documented.
So you'll actually go and help document and help outline the actual specific manufacturing process in order to achieve a level of quality that you deem maybe appropriate for this industry?
Yeah, so for example, wire bonding is a very big part of some of our assemblies. So if you have a tiny little die, you may not have a package that might be a microcontroller or some memory. You want to actually save space by taking it out of the package and just having that bare silicon die. You need to wire bond it into the rest of the circuitry. So we have a couple of wire bonders, and it's not just that piece of equipment, it's how you use the settings to make sure you're achieving a quality bond that's going to stick, what kind of gold wire that you're using, how hard it is, how thick it is. You don't want to have hiccups occurring when you do a transfer of manufacturing to a different facility. So there's a lot of thought that has to go into designing the manufacturing process, and we're very disciplined about documenting that, running thousands of one operation to characterize it and make sure you can see all the ways you can have a problem occurring and making sure you're ready to address that. And then we would have that as a quality document, an artifact you can pass on to whoever the contract manufacturer is.
So just kind of thinking out loud here, what is the, ballpark price point for commercializing, let's say, a sensor device within maybe an oil and gas application, for example, or what kind of a dollar value is it that we're looking at for a small or medium-sized business that has a product that they would like to bring from the kind of the idea stage through to getting ready for manufacturing and actually commercializing that product?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that you raise the energy industry as a sort of typical example. The energy industry in Canada is one where the price point that the market is willing to bear can be very high, and often that means a lot of development costs on the part of the entrepreneur going into that. The reason for that is you can take a consumer-grade sensor that, whether it's a microphone or a video camera, when you want to use it in the energy industry, immediately the price goes up quite a bit. You have to meet things like intrinsic safety requirements if you're going to be using it anywhere near a wellhead, for example. So you also have to be able to take your consumer-grade video recorder or microphone or whatever that sensor might be and put it in a very much harsher environment than it was typically designed for. So that really increases the price of development and in turn the price that you can charge your clients. So something that you might spend tens of thousands of dollars developing in a consumer-grade application might translate into hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars of development costs. So that shouldn't scare away some of your SMEs, though. If you're a young entrepreneur, if you're a small company and you're looking to develop something, you shouldn't be too worried about that because it's actually a barrier to other people entering into the market. And there are ways of raising that money. You have to get partners. There are government programs. some of your own skin in the game, though. There's no getting around that. You might have to save up a lot of money and have that ready to contribute. And in fact, investors will want to see that an inventor is contributing and putting some skin in the game and taking part of the risk. Even though it might not be the majority of that, you should still have, you know, several tens of thousands of dollars of your own at least to get started before you can flesh out the concept, but then realize there's going to be matching funding from other sources to help you out.
Certainly identify with that, with the skin in the game analogy, because I think that with anything, if you're not fully invested in it, and I guess if you don't believe in your product enough to put money into it, it's going to be hard for other people to believe in it as well. And it's interesting as well, just to go back to the point in terms of the development costs associated with oil and gas. I mean, my experience in procurement is something very similar, and it's interesting. I mean, if you're going to have a piece of pipe that you're using in a water plant versus a nuclear plant, it can be the exact same piece of pipe, but it can cost 20 times difference, you know, because you have to have a certain level of quality assurance associated with the criticality of failure. And so just to go back, so we're probably looking at, if you're an entrepreneur and you're kind of starting along this process of commercialization, you're looking at having maybe starting out with at least, you know, $20,000 to $30,000 to kind of start that process, and then it's going through the process of finding funding, finding partners, finding selling investors, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a really good way of summing it up. And not only the money, but you also want to find partners because they're going to bring experience with them that you may not have. So an entrepreneur might be an inventor who is very technically skilled, but may not be as aware of the marketing side of things or the financial side of things. So that's often hard for inventors, or in fact, any of us. We often like to surround ourselves with people who are just like us, and we don't recognize our blind spots. And so by getting involved with a lot of the ACAMP business development events, so we host seminars, for example, where you can also have a meet and greet and networking time, it forces people to get out there and meet other people who are different from themselves, even if they're in the same industry. And you get a lot of understanding of the software side of the business and what you need to have a fully fleshed out business case by being aware of some of the success stories that we present at our events.
Yeah, I fully understand or I guess agree with that, the point that you're making in terms of having the people that are using the product around the table when you're actually developing it, not developing it in your garage and then going and trying to sell it to kind of an end user, because the priorities that you think are important may not be necessarily the priorities of the oil and gas user or whoever is going to be the actual end user of the product. So just in terms of the development process, do you also, I guess, have a tie into industry in terms of or have some sort of a network in order to help with the development process associated with bringing the, let's say, oil and gas professionals to help with identifying whether or not the prototype is an actual product that people would want, or is that a service that you do offer as well?
Yeah, so that is a service that we offer. One is just through our networking events, but then we also have access to a number of different market reports from research companies like Yole, for example. And we also have access to a lot of the business libraries that are around, whether through the university or other institutions. And one of the ways companies can engage with us for this is through the set of Alberta Innovates grants. So Alberta Innovates Tech Futures has a series of STEP grants, and they often use ACAMP as one of the service providers for that grant. So the first one is they have a micro grant that they can have a company get a small amount of funding just to sort of understand the concept a lot a bit better. The next one is the higher one that goes up to about $20,000 that will allow a company to get a market study done. And then there's another one that's, I think it's up to about $50,000. And that's where they start to have some of the early prototype work getting funding. And then they have one beyond that that's for the next step in the product development. So that's just an example of Alberta Innovates grants. Again, it's matching money, so the entrepreneur will still have to put some money into it, but then they can get some funding, and they biggest ones is through IRAP, that's part of the NRC, and they have people that work with companies that help them to get funding and sort of make the connections they need to in the industry.
That's excellent. And just as a note here, if you're listening to this podcast, you can head to oilsandtech.com, and in the show notes for the show, I'll include a summary of the grants that Neil had kind of mentioned today. So, great. And so I'll hand it back over to you, Neil.
Thanks. So what I'll talk about next is some of our platform technologies. These are very expensive pieces of equipment and, you know, highly skilled people to operate them that someone developing an advanced engineering product might want to have but not be able to buy on their own. And what we did was ACAM was actually formed out of a market study that was done of the commercialization environment in Western Canada. And certainly areas where there was a need that was identified, but there was no private sector service matching that, that was sort of the menu list for equipment that ACAMP then started to purchase. So the first is low-temperature co-fired ceramic. This is a packaging technology you would often see in harsh environments for high-performance and high-reliability electronics parts. And as I go through the list, you'll really notice that we're very much focused on hardware. We do some firmware and software development, but really our strength is just in the hardware side. So what LTCC does is it's often used in, say, the automotive industry or the aerospace industry, someplace where you have sensors that need high reliability, and this would replace your FR4 board, your fiberglass that often would be used in circuits for circuit boards. So this is something that's a lot tougher, and it also has excellent RF characteristics as well if you're making some sort of an antenna. We have a lot of lab-on-chip experience as well with making microfluidic devices. So this might be a medical device. We can both simulate it with our software as well. We have a hot embossing machine that can stamp out low to medium volumes of microfluidic chips.
Just wondering, as a layman here, what is a microfluidic chip?
So an example of that might be your diabetes test. I think a lot of people are familiar with those blood glucose monitors. You have a small little throwaway piece of paper, or in our case, we're doing it in plastic, where you can mix together a sample of whether it's blood or water, or you're looking for some specific type of protein or chemical in that sample. And you have a microfluidic chip. They're often very cheap to make. They're sort of used once or only used a couple of times and then throw away. And then they feed into some sort of a more expensive reader where you would have the actual device making the reading with the microfluidic chip inserted. And so really the benefit of this is if you're doing field tests for water quality or if you're doing some sort of a medical test, it can be a point-of-care device. You don't have to go into a lab and wait for several days to get your results. You can have some sort of a reader and your microfluidic chip and do the reading right there. You have the result in seconds or minutes.
So the microfluidic chip process offers a real-time analysis of a physical, of a water sample or potentially like an oil sample, or it's some sort of like a way of quickly identifying data associated with a characteristic?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's about the rapidity of the reading and getting results quickly. Now, the chip itself is just the packaging for that. You have to decide if you're going to use water as your sample and what kind of chemicals you're going to mix with that water. And then maybe if you have an optical reader, there has to be some sort of a laser that would shine on that water and your marker chemical to see if it glows and see if you're detecting some kind of chemical you're wanting to find. So there's a lot of technology that goes into that, and we provide the packaging platform to let that happen. We don't solve the fundamental science. That's really up to the entrepreneur. But then once he has his test or her test, we're the ones who help package that in a microfluidic chip format. You also need to have packaging that controls the temperature. So, for example, if I have a laser, if sample, it'll start to drift off its frequency, and then you won't get the reading that you're wanting with that laser. You can use lasers for things like gas detection or communication devices, but it has to be set at the right temperature. So we will create packaging that is thermally managed so that we keep that laser inside at the right temperature and it's performing effectively. To do that, you often need a lot of very precise machining equipment. So whether that's e-beam welding, some sort of laser machining or electroplating, we have pieces of equipment that can do that machining to make that packaging.
Just to jump in there again here, so what is e-beam welding? I'm a big fan of all things that have fire and smoke, and so I've never heard of e-beam welding, but I'm interested.
Yeah, it's a piece of equipment that's for doing small pieces of metal that often might be specialty metals that you might use in non-corrosive environments where you're concerned about corrosion. And so it's just a way of sealing pieces of metal together that might be very unusual pieces of metal because of their size or their makeup.
So, for example, if you're looking to develop a product with Hastelloy alloy or one of the super alloys, you offer a specific welding process that can help you with ensuring the quality is in that process?
Yeah, that's the exact idea. And then, of course, if it's very small, with microtechnology, you have to make sure that it's exactly in the right position as well. So there's a precision aspect to it as well. Then once you have your device, you'd like to characterize it and test it. So that can be either inline testing as you're manufacturing it. You might need some sort of tests to make sure it's performing before you seal it all up. We have an inertial test bed, and that's for detecting location. If you have some sort of a sensor that is location sensitive, we have an inertial test bed for measuring the calibrating that actually. So, for example, suppose I want to take a location sensor and put it underground where you can't get satellite connections to give you your GPS, and it might have some kind of accelerometer. It might be going around bends and twists if I'm trying to map some kind of a pipe that's underneath the ground. With our inertial test bed, then you'd be able to characterize that sensor before you put it underground to make sure it's going to have an accurate reading. So that's one of the really cool pieces of test equipment we have. We also do reliability testing, so that's simulating taking a device and dropping it off the side of your truck, or if you're putting it on a helicopter and it's rattling around, we have equipment to simulate that, so before you put it in the field environment, you've characterized it and you know it's behaving the way it should. And when it doesn't, when it breaks, we have other pieces of equipment like a 3D ultrasonic and X-ray non-destructive test suite. So that's for imaging. If you have a device that's solid, it might be coated, for example, to protect it from its environment. It breaks deep down inside, and you don't know why. But if you rip apart all the packaging, you're kind of, it's destructive testing, you're not able to find out what was broken in the first place. So by using ultrasonic imaging, you'd be able to peer inside and take a picture of it and actually be able to detect whether there's a cold solder joint on your electronics, if there's a wire that's not connecting anymore, or something like that. And then that leads them into the failure analysis, where you can actually analyze what it is you're doing and see why something isn't performing the way it should, and then design it better for the next version. Also on the networking and business development side, we run a series of seminars every quarter. We just had one on medical technology. Actually, we held it in the Vancouver area. Typically, though, we would do it either in Edmonton or Calgary. We do it on topics like robotics, unmanned vehicles, energy, industry sensors, health and medicine. In the past, we've also run them on things like agricultural technology as well. So we try and help quite a few different industries that are important to Western Canada. And a lot of those past presentations you can actually find on our website. So if you're a business that's starting and you're looking for examples of who's in the area and what kind of success stories that are there, you can actually comb through some of the slides of previous years and just find out, you know, who it is. Also, we run a series of technology workshops, and those focused just on the technical side. Our seminars are, say, 100 people or more. The workshops are typically 10 or 20. The seminars are more business-focused. They talk about addressing markets. The workshops are more on a specific technology like micro-machining, designing high-temperature sensors, doing simulation, something like that. So, again, we often put some of the slides or materials for that available to people who would like to look at them. And what we would do is we would have a room full of engineers from local companies as well as one of our engineers. It would be a half-day event, and they would go through some sort of a technical area. This is a free event, just like our seminar, and you'd be able to get more one-on-one time with one of our engineers and sort of ask more in-depth questions on a specific area. So just to summarize then, we have quite a large series of capabilities. We have a product development group, a packaging and assembly center. We help clients to foster collaborative relationships, and we have a marketing and business development group that helps them with things like business cases. And we add value then by translating investments that have already happened into innovation and product creation into creating an economy that is more wealthy and more knowledge-based.
So just to kind of summarize, I guess, what we've talked about today, so my understanding of it is that the facilities that you offer here have a lot of lasers and advanced technologies, and if you're interested in learning more about a technological solution, then I think that it would be a good fit for a technology-based hardware solution for your facilities here. And so maybe for an entrepreneur that has an idea of a product but they don't know how that would actually work or how that would happen, I guess that would be a good fit for coming and seeing you. And then you can also help with the applications to government funding for the actual further development of those ideas.
That's really good. That's a great summary. Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, thank you for joining me here today. And so just before we finish as well, if somebody listening would like to reach out and get in contact with you, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
Okay, the first thing I do is look at our website, so get familiar with the services and see if there's a good fit. That's www.acamp.ca, acamp.ca. And the business development person who would help a client would actually be location dependent. So it's best to call the new number and then see where that can be routed for someone who can help the best. Now, I've talked a lot about Western Canada, but we actually help companies all over the world. Obviously, our main mandate is to promote Western Canadian innovation, but we certainly not stop from helping other Canadian companies or North American, or we do have a few clients that are actually international. So don't think that we're not willing to help anybody.
Okay, great. Well, yeah, thank you for joining me here on the OSN Tech Podcast, and it will... Yeah, I look forward to, I guess, so now we're going for a tour here of the facility, and I'll include maybe an excerpt if there's anything really cool or interesting to add on to it. Okay, so we've just, Neil and I just returned from a tour of the ACAMP facility here in southern Edmonton, and I guess I'm just so excited seeing all this world-class equipment, stuff that I don't completely understand, but after kind of touring the facility here at the ACAMP, I've come to realize that they have some of the best equipment in the world in order to actually develop microcontrollers, any technology-focused product, and bring it along to the point where you can actually commercialize it. So I think that the best analogy to explain this place is that here you have access to the same technology that you would in a commercialization lab of the biggest companies in the world. And so I think that there's a real opportunity if you have a technology-focused product to reach out and come down and visit Neil and the guys here at the ACAMP in Edmonton or Calgary. And so, Neil, thank you for having me on the tour here, and look forward to talking to you again.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Oil Sand Tech Podcast. For more information on our monthly meetup or back catalog, of previous episodes, head to oilsandtech.com. Thank you again for listening, and I hope that you